Sunday afternoon, December 10th, 1972. It was between Diane Dickerson and Miss Eveline Ritchie. Miss Ritchie has been a Midland public school teacher for 24 years. She began her teaching career in 1919, starting in Indiana, then Ohio, then up into Michigan. She got her four-year degree in Mount Pleasant Central, where she began afterwards teaching in the Midland Public Schools. On this tape will be discussed various things, such as the rising supervision within the classroom and how Miss Ritchie felt about it, the rising pay scale as the years went by, and the already then problem of becoming certified in various states, and various amusing circumstances that Miss Ritchie recalls. Miss Ritchie, it would be good right now if you could explain to us some of the places you have taught and some circumstances involved.
I taught a sixth grade rural school in Indiana. It was a small school, and I roomed and boarded at a home near there. I got $65 a month salary and paid $28 a month out of that for board and room. I had practically no supervision, with the exception of the county commissioner coming in perhaps once a year. And I had practically a free run of anything that I wanted to do. Then the next 2 years, I taught in a small rural town in Indiana by the name of Gas City. It was a glass factory town, and it brought in a lot of, you might call it riffraff from all over the country, a lot of them from the southern mountains. The first year I had 55 children in second grade, and the next year I had 65. And it was, the room was so crowded that you could hardly get around the sides of the room. And the youngsters, were so many of them, were so dirty, you could tell just how much of their face they washed every morning because there would be a ring around their face. And some of them were quite old for second grade. There was one boy came in one morning that, he looked like he must have been 12 or 13 years old. When I saw him come down my hallway, I thought, oh, I do hope he's just visiting. So when he sat down at the desk, I said, are you visiting? He said, no, I'm a comer. And so I realized then that I was in for something. We had a very old-fashioned lady for a principal. She wore a white apron most of the time in the room. Her name was Miss J, Miss Ella J, and she was a very nice person to work for, a very motherly sort of person. We had a music supervisor who came in and he taught us music, but she was the only supervisor that I recall that we had. Everything else we did on our own. Then at the end of that year, the superintendent wanted me to come back for another year, but when the enrollment was coming up 10 each year, and I was afraid I'd have 75 the next year. So I decided that I would go and get another year's training. I had 1 year to begin on, which was permissible. So there was a teacher's college quite close to where I lived, so I decided that I would go and get another year's training, which made 2 years. And that gave me my life certificate then to teach in Indiana.
Oh, boy.
So
this second year was something you did on your own without
yes,
you,
yes.
It wasn't required?
No, I never was asked to take more training. I just dealt with as I felt that I needed it. So after I had got my diploma, my second normal diploma.
What year was this, would you say?
Well, this year was in about 1924 when I got that year's training. And then I went to Ohio. I had an offer of a job in Ohio. And I taught there for 3 years in second grade. And we had, let's see, what supervision did we have? I think we had a music teacher there. But that was all. And I was very much interested in art, so I felt like I'd like to be an art teacher. So I went to Chicago and took some work. And I supervised art 1 year free, just for the experience, just to see if I would like to do it. And we had quite a large enrollment there. And that was and near the end of 1 year was when I got the mumps and was laid up by the time when I had report cards to make out at the end of the year. And it was a real pleasant experience there. Well, then, while I was finishing up the next summer then in art school, my parents moved to Northern Michigan. So when I left school, then I went up there to where they were. And I got a position in a little school about 2 miles from my home. It was a little two-room school. I had the first 6 grades. But before they let me teach in Michigan, I had to promise to take a course in agriculture. Even though I had a life certificate for Indiana, I had to promise to take a course in correspondence for agriculture. I didn't have to teach it, and the teacher who was teaching 7th and 8th and 9th grades had to teach agriculture, and she had never taken the subject and wasn't required to. So I boiled all winter long as I worked on that agriculture course. And then I was there 2 years, and then I had a chance to teach in it was really mostly Finnish people in Talava, Michigan. And we had, I don't think we had any special teachers there, but the little girl in my room, the daughter of a superintendent, was so immature, she wasn't ready to go on, and I kept her back, and the superintendent was very much displeased about it. And as a result, I didn't get my school back the next year. And then I was out for several years, and finally I got back in by promising to take a course. That was the next time. It was a nature study, that they would renew my license.
Now, let's see, what date was this?
Now, this was in 1933 to 36. That I got this, it was 1928-29 when I was in the Talva. And then I was out 3 years during the Depression, and the jobs were so scarce, and my license had expired. So by taking this correspondence course, I got my license renewed for 3 years. And I taught those 3 years in a small rural school in the central part of the Lower Peninsula. Upper part of the Lower Peninsula. And it was a rural school. I had, the last year I taught, I had 12 pupils. That was the last year that the school was in operation because there weren't enough children in the district anymore to pay to continue the school. And the only supervision that I had, either at the little school, little two-room school, or this school, was once a year, the county superintendent would drop in to see us. And I felt rather uneasy. I didn't know how he liked my teaching, and it was what he looked like. So I kept my eye out on that window in my room, faced the road, and I kept my eye out there pretty closely so I could maybe best before he come in. And we had it made out with a teacher back of me that if I saw him come, I'd give her warning by sending a book in. So one day a man...
This, you sent, what book was this?
Well, it didn't matter. Just any book that I sent would do.
It was a signal, huh?
Yes. So one day a man got out of the car, answered the description, and he had a large piece in his hand. I thought, the 0 hour has come. So I sent the book in to her, and the man came to the door and knocked, and said, I understand it's a piano because it needs to be tuned. So you can imagine how I felt. And she was expecting somebody to come in, and nobody came. But I guess when she heard tuning the piano, she knew. So I had a long time living that down. And then it was the same in this other rural school. The superintendent came once a year. And then you were on your own. You could follow out almost any plan that you wanted to. You had your monthly reports to send in and attendance. But the lesson planning and programs and anything like that was up to you to do as you wanted.
Do you feel like that the lack of supervision caused some teachers to not teach as qualifiedly as they could have?
Well, it could have been. I don't know how it affected the others, but I know it gave me a freedom that I never felt after I had so much supervision. because there were some things that I felt stronger in that I could really put a lot of emphasis on. I was always interested in art, and I correlated art with everything I possibly could, which made it more interesting and often helped us to win prizes at the county fair for school. One year we did. We won the first prize, and I guess the first time the school had ever done that, and everybody was just thrilled over it. Mm-hmm. And the prize money we got, we bought a tool chest for the boys, and bought a big doll for the girls, and some other things too. And then we did some craft work, sewing for the doll, and the boys making things with their tool chest.
You know, that's kind of like today we've kind of gone back to that with your shop and your home ec.
Yes. They kind of enjoyed it. It was schoolwork can get terribly monotonous if you just do books all the time. Just read what's in the book and talk about it. You have to have activity to do things. And I tried to do that a lot. And the youngsters just enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I think they learned more too.
And then I know we're jumping ahead, but in later days, the supervision caused you to do less of this.
Yes, I had to do what they wanted done, and sometimes maybe it was in a field that I didn't feel too sure of myself in. And I don't know. There's something about it. I think a teacher can be supervised to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can have too much. You don't have enough freedom of your own to work out things. Mm-hmm. I know in social studies, we used to could work out our own social study program, and each month I would have. We take up different countries. One month we study about the Dutch, Germany, and March. And then we study about the Chinese, the Japanese, and the Eskimos, and the Pilgrims, and the Indians. And I had a large file of material for all of those. And oh, it was just fun. Well, when it began here in Michigan, social studies consisted of a study of Michigan in social studies. Well, I never got into anything that was so dull in all my life. It was several years before I could work up any interest myself in it, because so many of the things the children already knew, it was a lot of...
Because they probably got it every year.
Yes, it was really old stuff to them, some localities and things.
Was this, let me see, you got into Michigan, what year was it when you got into Michigan?
1911.
Okay, that'd be fine. Midland.
Well, it was 1937 when I came to Midland. And there were several years in that that we could do as we could. So I can't recall just what year it was that they began to talk about Michigan. But I think it must have been something about like the last 10 years that I taught that they began working on things like that. And it was so hard for me. I never taught anything. It was so hard for me to get an interest in it. Because I guess because I'm interested in people of other lands, and that especially interested me. I know we worked out so many interesting things, posters and books, and I read some stories about those people, and I used to just look forward to doing it.
I think every teacher has certain special areas where they can give to the child that other teachers can't.
Yes, and we used to work out so much hard work, and when visitors would come to school, we would bring them down to my room almost the first thing, and we'd see the things that we had done. It would make me popular with other teachers.
Well, why don't we quickly now, let's get a historical summary here of the years you taught first and just the school and the year, and then we can go into detail where we've missed, okay?
All right. Well, I was in Huntington County, Indiana, 1919-1920, and then Guest City, Indiana, from 1920 to 1923. And then the next year, I went to college, Marion College, Indiana. And then the next 2 years, 1926 to 28, at Marilla, Michigan. That was a little rural school. Mm-hmm. 1928-29 at Kaliva. And then 1933 to 36, the Maple Grove School up there in the northern part of the state. And then in 36 and 37, I got my degree from Mount Pleasant, and then the rest of the time I was in Midland.
Oh, I see. So, what caused you to actually go back and get your degree in Mount Pleasant?
Well, it's because my license had expired, and I figured...
Was it in Ohio that you had a lifetime teacher certificate?
Indiana.
Mm-hmm. But then
and so I decided that teaching was hard for me. It took so much out of me. that I didn't feel like I could teach all winter and go to school all summer. I had to have some time to recuperate. And I just figured I might just as well go and get it all in one go and have it over with. And that's what I did. I took them 1 year and 2 summers, right and running. I got my degree.
You got my degree from Central.
Yes, and that was a life certificate. It doesn't count now anymore because you have to have added training.
Yes.
But,
when did they change that, that you no longer could have a life certificate?
Yeah. I don't remember. It was, it must have been, hold up, 10 years, I guess, maybe before I quit. I know I kept thinking that they soon would be telling me that I'd have to get more training or get out. They never did. But I felt like I had stretched about as far as I dare. And I just didn't feel like there's so many subjects that they make you take that you really have to really help them much in your teaching. And I just felt like, after I got my time in, I just thought, well, I'm just going to quit. So I stand out for more.
And you retired at what year was
in
it?
In
61. 1961. And it was that probably about 10 years before you started getting the news that you'd have to have added training.
And quite a few of the teachers didn't have their full 4 years then yet. So I guess they weren't going to begin cracking down so much on us who had it until everybody had it. And then they began.
It hasn't been too long, has it?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't.
Even the temporary certificate, you probably taught with some who had temporary certificates.
Yes.
Well, let me see. I think you've got kind of a list there of how much money you made in certain schools.
Yes.
And I think that'd be interesting if we could remember the year, too.
Yes. Well, in 1920, I got $65 a month. The next 2 years in Indiana, I got $90 a month. And the next 2 years in Montpelier, Ohio, I got $990 for 3 years. Some of the teachers weren't getting that much, and they paid me that much to come. And they didn't like it very well, so they had to bring theirs up to my salary before they would dare raise mine again.
Well, then, now, why they paid you special because of, for what reason was it?
Well, I don't know. I guess maybe I stated how much I wanted, and they were needing teachers, so they gave me.
I see.
And then, let's see, I believe, was it that year? No. No, then I taught from 1926 to 28. I got $855 the first year and $895 the next year.
You know what might be interesting as you talk about money? Was this comparable? Was it good living?
It was considered good wages then.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And then 1928 and 29, I got $999.99. That was the year that income tax came in. If you made $1,000, you had to pay income tax. So they made our salary just short 1 cent, so we wouldn't have to pay income tax.
Very wise.
We were glad.
Sure.
And then when I was in Ohio, they began talking about teacher's retirement. Well, another teacher and I, we didn't figure we were going to teach long enough to get retirement, so we didn't take it out. Uh-huh. It was optional then. And neither one of us took it out.
What year was this then?
Well, that would have been, let's see, that was in, about 24, 25.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't going to teach long enough to get any attention. Why would we have them take that out of our salary?
You tricked yourself, didn't you?
And then let's see, Morella, they took it out. How was it? They took it out in Indiana, and I wrote and found out how much it was, and I paid in on that year, and they allowed it in years, so that I got that. Then in 1933 to 36, at Little Country School, I got $360 for 2 years, and then one woman in the...
Well, that was down a little bit than what you had.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And it was a very small
score.
Well, I did. And then there's one lady in the district that thought it was so terrible that they didn't give me any more. But the next year, then I got $630.
Good.
And I never will forget when I came to Mount Pleasant, I was offered $1,400. And to me, that was hitting the jackpot after those years. And I never will forget the look on the girls' faces down in the dining hall when I told them where I was going and what I was going to get. Why, their jaws dropped down and their eyes bugged out.
Now, this was from to Midland, when you went to
when
Midland,
I came
your
to Midland,
first pay.
That I was really in the money then, $1,400.
That says a lot for Midland, huh?
Yes.
That's good.
And then the next 3 years, I got a $50 raise. That was $1,450 for 3 years. I didn't think I'd get any raise at all the second year because the first year was so hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. And then it went from $1,650 to $1,850, $2,050, $2,200, $2,445, $2,600, $3,100, $3,635, $4,018, $4,297, $4,925, $5,130, $5,660, $6,050, $6,466, $6,660, $71, $7,214, $7,250, and the last was
$7,560.
I didn't get
the
last one.
The last was about 61, huh?
Yeah. And the last salary that I got isn't as much as they're starting them in on now.
Well, it's gone up that high. I was going to say, was it 75? 50. Right, they're paying now, today, about 8,000 over. Mm-hmm. I thought so.
Without any experience.
Uh-huh. Isn't that remarkable? Of course, it's inflating like that, but
yes.
I think it's also the standard over there. Yes, that's for the economist to tell us. I really don't. Uh-huh. Well, let me see. Why don't you tell us some things that you feel are of interest, maybe in your... We talked earlier about, before we ran the tape, something about some standards for teachers. Didn't they used to back then require teachers to...
Yes,
have some high
standards? Yes, they did, and I think it was right.
Uh-huh.
And they, when I was interviewed for my first job in Midland, the supervisor who came over asked me if I smoked. That was one thing, and teachers were not allowed to smoke. So later on, some of them would go in the teacher's restroom and smoke, and it was frowned upon.
Uh-huh.
They didn't like it. And for teachers to drink, that was just out.
Uh-huh. Well, one time you were telling me when you first taught that I think that this is right, there was a requirement that lady teacher was not supposed to be married?
Yes. Yes.
How long ago was that now?
Well, that was when I first came from Midland against the ruling. I know I lived with one of the teachers. She was from my home community. And she got married at Christmas time, and she had to keep it a secret till the end of the year. And, of course, her husband, he had a right to come to see her, but nobody knew it. And it really was kind of embarrassing sometimes. Often, many times, that he came. And she didn't tell it until just about the end of the school year.
And then she automatically could not teach.
Well, I don't think she taught the next year.
Would she have been able to?
I rather doubt it.
They didn't really allow married women to teach.
Not unless they were widows.
Okay.
Divorced.
Did they have some reason behind it? I mean, that sounds so foreign to me.
Well, I think that the danger of pregnancy was
the big thing. Mm-hmm. I see. I suppose then back then the mothers were in the home a lot.
Yes,
a lot
they were
more
where they need to be.
Right. Let me see. Were there any other standards you could think of for teachers? At all?
Well,
as we leave that subject.
They're supposed to be modestly dressed.
I know I had a teacher one time say that he was asked if he were Protestant. And he lied about it. He said he wasn't. It was a Catholic community. And
oh.
He wouldn't have gotten the job if he
I think that if it was a Protestant community, they would prefer Protestant teachers. And if it was a Catholic community, I think they would prefer Catholic teachers. But I never had any difficulties.
Uh-huh. As far as that goes. Then let's go on to, you've talked about the little supervision and the freedom about that. How about some school conditions that, as you began, and then some changes?
Well, I often had to do my own janitor work, my sweeping after the day's work was over. And sometimes I had to make my own fires. And when we were school up in Michigan, we had a wood pile, a wood shed outside, and the morning before school, the boys would bring in wood and pile it behind the stove so that we would need it. Of course, if we happened to run out, the real coal we ran out, there never was any difficulty in getting somebody to go to the woodshed to bring in some more coal. And they, most of them brought their lunch and their pails. And sometimes they'd climb up on the wood pile in the back of the room to eat their lunch. And we had a lot of fun. Of course, in the winter time, they had their sleds that they'd slide on. And we had some discipline problems, of course. We do every place, I guess.
Why don't you tell us the story about the leaks? I thought that was interesting.
Well, at this school, it was right at the edge of a woods, and there were a lot of leaks in the spring. Of course, if anybody doesn't know anything about leeks, just imagine a real extra strong onion, and you've got some idea what leeks smell like. And the youngsters would get it into their heads that they would eat a lot of leeks, and their breath smells terrible. The teachers would send them home. Well, one day they were talking to me about it, and just kind of fishing to want to know what I do. And they said, teachers used to send them home when they eat it. Well, I said, I'm not going to send you home if you eat it. Well, what will you do? I said, that's for you to find out. And I didn't know myself what I was going to do, but I was just hoping that that would keep it from happening, and it did. They were afraid to push it. I never had any trouble with leaks. But you can expect most anything in the country.
Well, I guess kids still do that. They'll try and get out of school as much as possible. Play sick.
they didn't make that a go.
Let me see. If I think back, think of things that they do today. Did the government supply textbooks or paper or anything like that to schools while you taught? Or at least
part of the places that children had to buy their own, sometimes certain things were supplied. I know sometimes the books got so worn and dog-eared, lost their covers and some of the pages out of it. I know we used to have time sometimes in getting enough books that were all together for a class. And we had big long recitation seats that the children would sit on when they would come to class. Sit there swinging their feet.
Oh, yeah? They didn't have a desk per child, huh?
Well, yes.
How would they be built?
But they would be nailed down to the floor. You couldn't move them around. They were all stationary. And sometimes they were double seats where two could sit together. You had to be sure you got the right combination.
Yeah, that's for sure. In your teaching methods, did you find any great changes taking place as you got more education or as you got into a different school?
Yes, I did. I learned things towards the last that I'd give anything if I had known when I first started. It would have made it so much easier. Little devices that I got on to. I know there was the last few years that I taught that helped so much. We had sort of a little citizenship drive that if a child did certain things, why, he'd get so many marks for it. And if we had two, one for citizenship and one for scholarship. And they'd keep a record of their work for the week. And after they got so many points, they'd get a little ticket. And after they had earned 100 points, then they'd get a nice certificate for 100. And it was surprising how this worked, how hard they worked to get perfect papers. And then for citizenship, a different point in that line, that if I didn't have to reprimand anybody for anything, they'd get a gold star that week. And when they got four gold stars, they got a citizenship ribbon, and we had a sort of a little citation service that they would come up, and I'd pin the ribbon on them, and they could earn 10 ribbons in a year. And it was